good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome to the coaching staff, episode number 82. We've set a new record. We're giggling even before we started this one here this week. Welcome back to the coaching staff. Mr. Tony D. Viss on the other side of the line. Mr. Viss, how are things in the CR? Did you avoid tornadoes today?
We did avoid tornadoes yesterday. It was crazy. We 250 is when we get out of school, and bell rang. My kids were heading out, and about that time was when they issued the tornado watch. And so they were supposed to come back in. Not all did. We're supposed to come back in and hang out. So we hung out for about another 30 minutes, 25, 30 minutes or so before they got to head out of school. So they got to spend a little extra time with me.
Yeah, well, they are just, they're that lucky that they get that extra half hour with you, buddy. So
I'm sure they feel that way.
I'm sure they don't. All right. So episode 82. Tony, I've got five uniform numbers for you. I've got three tight ends and two wide receivers with uniform number 82.
Let's go John Stallworth.
That's one.
And I think I'm going to hit the struggle bus here for a while. So two wide receivers, three tight ends, right?
Yep.
Whew.
One.
Jason Witten.
That is one.
Okay.
So you got two tight ends and a wide
and
receiver.
One receiver.
The other wide receiver.
Is it Steve Largent?
Nope. Early
83.
Early NFL.
Oh.
We're talking, but he's really, really famous. 1950s.
1950s early NFL. Lance Allworth?
No, good guess. Same time period.
Maybe it's not Raymond Berry.
It is Raymond Berry.
Wow.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, not to be confused with Raymond Burr. It's Raymond Berry. Yes.
Okay, so now we're back to some tight ends here.
One had his heyday in the 80s, the other one in the, I would say, aughts.
Trying to think of the Raiders tight end. Was it like Todd Christensen or something like that?
That is incorrect.
Thanks for getting my hopes up there. No. Kellen Winslow.
Nope.
Dang it.
Depending on your point of view, one of these two annoys you or you're entertained by him every day.
Rob Gronkowski?
That is incorrect, and I'm going to have to call it on you, Tony.
Okay.
Shannon Sharp.
Yeah. Okay.
Either annoys you or you're entertained by him every day. And then the other one from the 80s, the great Ozzie Newsome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Kind of that Kellen Winslow, maybe a little earlier than Kellen Winslow, but in that area.
Yeah, somewhere in that, in the 80s, okay. In that ballpark area. The Marty Schottenheimer, Bernie Kosar,
Cleveland Browns.
You bet.
So, the real ones.
The real, yes, the real Cleveland Browns. They were the dog pound in the old Cleveland Stadium. Yep. So I fell in love with John Elway as my favorite football player, probably of all time. Because of the 87 AFC Championship game in Cleveland and watching him put together the drive.
The drive.
Yeah.
I did not know you were a big John Elway guy.
Oh, can you imagine John Elway playing today? He would.
He might throw for 6,000 yards.
6,000 yards, and he would just... Oh, him and Marino would be a great experiment to see what they would look like today. That's my opinion, but I think those guys, and if you gave John Elway, I mean, John Elway, like it was John Elway and 47 other dudes. I mean, they were not good, and he took them to two or three Super Bowls, and they got waxed every time. But I mean, yeah.
Until he didn't.
Yes, exactly. So, hey, enough football talk here. Let's get into
this. Is in a football pod?
No, it's not a football pod. Sorry, my Shannon Sharp. We are not going to talk any football here. So, time management in coaching. I think a skill that you can work on as a coach in the off season, because one of the things that we face, especially as you get more responsibilities, and I think Tony, you and let's start it here. I think you and I can both attest that one of the great challenges, especially when you go from an assistant coach to a head coach, is that management of time and all the new responsibilities that you have put on your plate. I think is one of the biggest. You think you're ready for it, but you're not really ready for it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And when you get ready to assume that responsibility and hop in there, one of the things I would really encourage coaches with is to figure out kind of those list of responsibilities, like your youth stuff. You know, you take a look at, like, when do you want to have your scouting reports done, practice plans done, you know, just all those different things that go in there, media responsibilities and so on and so forth, and put it like on a calendar and in pencil, write in things that you want to do. That way, you know, you have an idea of what all needs to be done, and it doesn't jump up on you and bite you by surprise. You know, it's just very important to kind of delegate out throughout the calendar year, camp stuff and so on and so forth. You know, all that stuff, t-shirt orders and all that great stuff. You just got to make sure that you have a plan and you work your plan.
Yeah. I'm going to start with this, Tony. And I will, first of all, this is something I'm pretty passionate about, because I think that one of the things that burnt me out when I was at Scott was just not delegating enough, not, you know, poor. And I thought I was good at it until I got away and I'm like, boy, did I sucked at this, you know, in that regard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was in between jobs, you know, Mike Nabors had this great quote that I saw: if it doesn't involve winning, I don't do it as a head coach. And it's Brian Williams, basketball toolbox or something like that. And Mike Nabors has contributed a bunch of stuff over the years, whether he was at Arkansas or at University
Washington.
Of Washington. But he had an article where he made a list of every mistake that he made as a first-year head coach, starting from day one. And he had this list of 300 and whatever, how many things that he messed up on in his first year. And what he realized was he was getting involved as a head coach in a lot of things that didn't involve winning. And so one of the things that I said I'm not going to do again is just that. And that is something that when I was putting together, okay, I need to do this or I need to delegate this, that was the first question I asked myself. Does it involve winning, either in the short term or the long term? And when you say winning, you need to go spend time with your sixth grade feeder team, your junior Cougar sixth grade team. Well, that is going to involve winning someday. So that is something that you need to do. Now, we'll talk about prioritizing things, or at least that's on my list. Is that the biggest priority on December 15th? Probably not, but can it be your biggest priority on June 15th? Absolutely. You know why? Because you got more time to work with and, you know, things like that. So for me, that really stuck with me. If it doesn't involve winning, then I don't do it as a head coach. And so that helped me when it came to my delegation of responsibilities and things like that. And then I think another thing, I got one more point here, Tony, and I'll turn it back over to you, or I'll let you kind of read off this here. I feel like I've been talking for a long time right now. If you're going to delegate responsibilities, but you want certain things done in a certain way, I think the important thing that you do is you take the time to train whomever it may be, your manager, your assistant coach, whatever, and you take a month to make sure that they've got it down right if you feel it's that important to you, and then you turn it over to them and you let them make it your own. Or the third level of priority is, hey, this needs to be done. I don't care how you do it. Just get it done. I think those are the three levels that you need to prioritize when it comes to your own time management and taking care of those things. So, Tony, I threw a lot out there. Take it wherever you'd like, buddy.
Yeah, I think, Marty, you know, kind of the priority type stuff, you know, and putting it on a calendar throughout the year, I think that's really, really key. And the reason why I say that is a lot of times what will happen is when you get in the middle of something, it seems like things begin to stack up on you. Mm-hmm. And as these things begin to stack up on you, you feel the stress, you feel the pressure. And the next thing you know, it's affecting your mood and behavior and how you treat your players. And that you don't want to happen. And so if you can prioritize it and spread it out throughout the year, I think that's really, really helpful. And then the other thing that I could kind of sit there and empathize and go, yeah, I've been there, is trying to do everything yourself.
Yeah.
And as you try to do everything yourself, as far as those things go, what ends up happening is you burn yourself out and you're not good for your team. And that's really harsh. But the other thing that goes along with that and dovetails into it is if you can give responsibilities to your staff that they can handle, and like you said, if it's important, do it with them for a while till you feel like they've got it under control and got it where you want it. Mm-hmm. If it's just get it done, then pass that on too. But it's one of those things where you're training that next generation of coaches. You know, you want to make sure as you go through and do that stuff that, you know, you are preparing them to do those things so that when they slide over 6 inches to the head coaching seat down the road, however many seasons that happens to be, that they're prepared. And you have a responsibility as a head coach to do that, to mm-hmm. get those guys, if they want to do that, if they want to be a head coach, you have a responsibility to help them and train them, prepare them to do that.
Mm-hmm. I like what you said there, Tony, as well, about the year-round calendar. And I literally had it wasn't terribly detailed, but it hit the important things. But I had a one-page document that I printed off, and I would hang it up in my space somewhere. And okay, in February, you need to be thinking about this, this, and this. In March, you need to be doing this, this, and this. In April, blah, 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 you know, and that type of thing. It was just a one-page simple document that was in, you know, 12 or 13 font or whatever. So it wasn't terribly detailed, but it was just like, okay, yep, I got to get our feeder. We got to do our feeder team tryouts this month. I got to start getting that organized. You know, we got to think about, you know, signing up, you know, we got to start putting out stuff for summer camps. For elementary summer camps in February, even though it's not until June, we need to start putting together that and get the dates locked down and start talking to the boys program about that. So I think putting together a year-round calendar, Tony, whatever it is for you, and a lot of our calendars will be a lot the same because we're all kind of on that same rhythm, that same cycle, but I think that's something that I would highly recommend as well.
Yeah, I just think that makes a whole lot of sense, you know, because if you don't do some of that stuff, like I said, it can slip through the cracks. And the next thing you know, you're in panic mode and, you know, maybe it's ordering t-shirts at summer camp and you're stressed. And next thing you know, you're not being the best version of yourself to your future players. And they don't need to see that. And, you know, you don't want to turn them off because, you know, you let something slip through the crack. And if you can put things out there and do them in advance, it just makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, get signed up today for the 4th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic will take place on Saturday, April 27th at the AEF Basketball Academy facility located at South 99th Circle and Portal Road in La Vista, Nebraska. We've got a great lineup of speakers, starting out with three on-court demonstrations. Justin Carter, former Creighton basketball player and owner and operator and founder of ProVision Basketball here in Omaha. He's going to do some essential skills and drills for player development. Dave Hubert, the head girls basketball coach at Ashland Greenwood High School, is going to do defensive principles and drills. Mark Sfagera, the head men's basketball coach at my alma mater, the Harvard of the Heartland, Briarcliff University. Great offensive mind, and he's going to talk about offensive basketball. One of the great things that we do at a Pen and a Napkin Clinic is we have our classroom sessions during our lunches. And we've got three great speakers to come in this year to talk during our lunches. Jim Simons, the head boys basketball coach at Omaha Westside, is going to talk about using the three-point shot. Andy Gerlez, my good friend G, going to talk about building a program foundation and practice principles from Papillion La Vista South. And Tyler Bird, the Think Shrink, you heard him on the podcast a few weeks ago. He's going to talk about mental health for coaching and keeping balance in your coaching life. And then we're going to have two breakout sessions. That's probably the thing that makes a Pen and a Napkin Clinic the most unique thing, is you're going to sit around and you're going to talk with random coaches about random topics and pick the brains of random coaches that are going to be there for the clinic. Along with that, once the clinic is done, perhaps the best part of the clinic, I don't know, there's a lot of good things about the clinic, is our post-clinic social. And that's going to be at Wine 121, located at 120th and Center here in Omaha. Just $15 per coach if you want to attend that. Again, it's all about the coaches, and I try to keep it really, really affordable. This year, for one coach, for over 7 hours worth of stuff, $50. That's about $7 an hour to get great information. Two coaches from a staff, $90 or $45 a piece. Three coaches from the same staff, $120, so $40 a piece. If you have four or more coaches from your staff, that's $35. That's $5 an hour that you're going to pay for your whole staff to have a great day of knowledge and learning things. So if you're interested in signing up for the clinic, look for our flyer on Twitter, or you can email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter. Registrations are due Thursday, April 25th. Have to do that for the lunch count and make sure that we're taken care of there. But coaches, you will not regret signing up for the fourth annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. Do that today. What else you got, Tony?
You know, just kind of taking a look at it as far as like time management stuff goes, you know, you have to be careful during the season to put it away at different times, you know, because if you're going, you know, especially late in the year, there's so many films on teams, like they've played 15 games. You can't watch all 15 films.
Correct.
And so you've got to prioritize, okay, this game was close, this game was recent, and maybe you do a third game. I don't know, but you can't do all 15. And so you have to begin to kind of put like, you know, things in there that you just don't overload on. I mean, when we were in the tournament, we played Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And, you know, and so as far as things go, I think I had the semifinal opponent. That was kind of the one that I was responsible for. And so it's just trying to make sure as I watched them, I watched their first round game at the state tournament. I went back, I watched, three, four films of them during the season. And then I passed my notes on to John. This is what I think. And so then, you know, and it's one of those things too, you can't get too detailed at that point in time, because you're turning around in about 24 hours and you're going to get, and so you have to give them in sound bites so that they are able to be able to still be proactive rather than reactive. And I think that's something to kind of keep in mind too, is, you know, you've got to keep things on scouts a page to maybe a page and a half. You have to watch only so many film, and there has to be a point in time where, hey, you know, it's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, I'm good. I'll pick it up again tomorrow during my prep or whatever.
Yeah. I love that, Tony. Prioritization was on my list as well. And I loved what you had to say there. And I think like an underrated aspect of staying organized, and you said it right at the end there, is taking care of yourself. Getting the, you know, for me, just, and again, we're seasoned and experienced. We need our beauty sleep, A, because we don't have a lot of beauty left, and we need the solid sleep that we can get, you know. But I agree 100% there with that. When you're prioritizing, I think it helps prioritize, or what helps you to prioritize, and you brought this up, Tony, is keeping a calendar. I have a planner. I am a nerd. I self-proclaimed nerd when it comes to my planner. It has to be a certain way. It is. I'm not a, and I'll go into this in a second. I'm not a Google Calendar guy. I've got to have it in hand. I write everything down by hand. All of those different things. I'm a real big believer in lists. And I think that you need to get yourself a good calendar, a good system of how you're going to prioritize. Now, again, what Marty Plum does is different from what Tony Viss might do or how he does things. I mean, it's up to your mind and how you process stuff, but I know for me, this is what works. And one of the things that I picked up from Coach Meyer is plan your week on Sunday and then plan the next day the night before, or try to the best of your ability. Sometimes it doesn't work out that well. You know, it just doesn't happen. But those lists are really, really important. I really believe in writing things down by hand to help you prioritize it. You remember, I can't remember the exact number, but it's something like you remember things three or four times more when you write it down by hand than you do by typing it or taking a picture of it or whatever. So, and so I really believe in that. And I also believe, you know, I use highlighters to color coordinate and color code things at times. Just because, and again, folks, you might be listening to this and go, that guy's messed up. Well, maybe a little bit, without a doubt. If you ask Mrs. Plum, she would say, yeah, absolutely he is. But until you are in that situation where you have a family, you have three kids, you are the head coach of a program, you're teaching full time, and you know all of those different things, you have to come up with a way to have those priorities put into shape or into place. You can get away with it for X amount of time, but if you're not organized, if you're not putting your lists in priority, if you're not taking care of those things, then I think eventually this is going to catch up to you, and you're going to be just out on the just really out of luck in this whole regard here. So, Tony, feel free to mock my nerdy organizational system here all you would like, my friend.
No, I think it's great in as far as it goes. I used to be a big paper person, and then COVID happened and everything. You know, we went to online learning and different things like that. And so I've come to embrace Google Calendar, mm-hmm. but I can definitely, I mean, you take me 5 years ago, I'm the same way. I like to print off the 12-month blank calendar, and I like to write it in by hand and different things like that. I don't know if I ever got to the color coding side of it, but I can definitely see how that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. Extra level of dorkiness here on the west side of the Missouri River rather than on the east side. You're just that much cooler than me, Tony. So
yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of my spiel on that part of it. I mean, I've got more to talk about, but what else you got, buddy?
I'm a big routine guy, mm-hmm. big routine. You know, like I show up at school pretty much the same time every day, 7:10 to 7:15. I take that 30 minutes before class starts at 7:50, and I use it as a prep period, if you will, before school begins. And that's kind of what I do. And then during the season, when I get into my real prep period, and we do blocks, so my preps are about an hour and 30 minutes in length, I am super organized and efficient during that time. And depending upon the day, like if we play Tuesday during my prep on Wednesday, I'm breaking down our film from Tuesday night. And then on the weekend, I'll break down our film. If we play Friday, break down our film on Saturday. Then on Sunday, I'm getting the scout finalized, because when I walk in on Monday to practice, they're getting the scout on Monday. When we play on Friday, they're getting the scout on Thursday. And just making sure it's very, very routine. And again, I know that kind of sounds like priority, but it's more of a routine thing for me so that I don't fall out of that. And if you get into that routine, it just helps things go so much smoother.
Mm-hmm. Not that I would recommend any other pod other than a pen and a napkin, the coaching staff above any other one. But Tony, over the last week or so, I've dove into the new pod with JJ Redick and LeBron. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Coach G, Andy Gerlez, for turning me on to that, and TK, Tom Crable, for that. But you know, they were on the one I was listening to. He was talking about the discipline it took for his greatness and the selfishness and the routine. LeBron was talking about it. Both of them were talking about it. And I think if you want to be really, really good, you have to establish that discipline routine. And you just can't fly by the seat of your pants. I love what you're saying there, Tony. I kind of have the same thing. Little bit different. I get to school at 7:45, just because I'm not a great morning person. I would rather work at night than in the mornings. So I'll stay up a little bit later, but I need to. I'm also at the point again in my seasoned and experienced state. I know I've got to get 7 hours of sleep at minimum for me to be on the top of my game. But I have those routines as well. Right now, I have first period free this semester. So I've got, basically that first hour of the day I come in and I've got, do my journaling, do this. I teach current events, so I've got to get this organized. Those routines are so really, really important. And it brings me to one of my points that I've got left here. It helps you, your routine helps you work ahead. Your routine helps you work ahead. And I think one of the biggest issues that we have in coaching is at times we procrastinate. You can't procrastinate. And how do you get away? What gets you in trouble with procrastination? It's the things that you don't want to do. For me as a teacher, as an example, I'm really open about this. When I talk to, like, what do you call it? A practicum student that comes in once a week right now. And I've told her, here's the one thing that I hate about being a teacher. I hate grading. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I loathe it. It is the thing I like the least about teaching. So what do I do first and foremost when it comes up? I grade when the stuff needs to be graded. Because I know if I procrastinate, if I give myself the opportunity to procrastinate on it, then it's going to pile up and it's going to become a massive mess. And so if there's something when you're coaching, I'm not really big into blank, whatever. Okay, then do that first and get that taken care of first and have the discipline to do that first so that you know you get that taken care of and you get it taken care of the right way. So then you get to, the stuff that you really, really enjoy to do, it's that carrot at the end of the stick. And I think that's part of your routine as well, part of your discipline of it. And I think that's something that I've tried to do, and it's really helped me out with my time management, with the stuff that I've done.
Yeah, and the thing that I like that you brought up there was working ahead. If you can work ahead and stay ahead, it makes it so much easier, because what happens is if you don't work ahead and all of a sudden you find yourself behind, then all of a sudden it's kind of like the worst thing you can do when you start to drown is panic. And when you start to fall behind as a coach, worst thing you can do is panic there. And so if you can keep ahead and keep working ahead, I think that makes so much sense. And then, like you said, if you can take and maybe do that thing that you like the least first and get that out of the way, and then kind of work to what you really enjoy. Maybe it's watching film, maybe it's practice planning, I don't know, whatever it may be, then keep working towards that so that as you get to the end of your day, the end of your week, the end of whatever you're trying to accomplish, you can kind of sprint through that finish line.
I've got one more big thing left, Tony. What do you got, buddy?
The one thing, I kind of go through with taking a look at this as far as the whole thing goes, is just the fact that, we've kind of talked about this with practice planning and just the fact, like, I know you mentioned Coach Meyer had said the night before, do what you that practice plan. And that's one of the things where I think that's really helped me has been to practice plan ahead. Like, we talked about the calendar, how you can put things on your calendar of what to do. And, I set goals as far as, like, I know ahead of time when I want to put certain things in. Now, don't get me wrong, there has to be that art to it as well. It's not always just a science. You have to understand, hey, we really stink at rebounding right now. I need to put more time in rebounding. Our passing's atrocious. Our press break, we really need to put that as an emphasis. And it was just one of those things where I think you can work those practices where, okay, I need to get this in offensively right now. And you can work that, 1, 2, maybe perhaps as many as 3 weeks ahead on some of that stuff. And so that would be where I would advise coaches during the season is plan practices out, not necessarily days ahead, but a week or two ahead. And if you really get to where you kind of have a feel for it, maybe as many as three.
Mm-hmm. Yo, and I've said this before. I used to plan my practices. I would have every practice planned up until our first game. And then being able to tweak it there. So I think that's a great idea, Tony, you know, or, you know, you're sitting there on Saturday or Sunday and you're getting ready to go into your week. Hey, we've got Kennedy on Friday night. We know they're going to switch everything. So we got to start thinking about this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, just simple things like that. And that, but you're only able to do that if you have the time to be able to think ahead. If you're just keeping your head above water instead of learning how to swim, that's the place you're going to stay. And you're just going to wear yourself out just keeping your head afloat there. So I like that, buddy. So the last thing that I have is you have to limit your distractions. If you want to have really, really good time management, if you're going to do this the way that you, the way that you intend and you want to do it, I think obviously everybody's brains are changing with the phones and with the internet and all of these things, but you've got to limit those distractions. You've got to put the phone away. I read an article one time, you know, at some levels, you have coaches saying, you know, I'm putting in 70, 80 hours a week and so forth and so on. And then they have people come in and they observe them for 2 or 3 weeks. And what they come to find out is a lot of guys are spending 20 hours a week just BSing with people, whether it's through text or phone calls or things like that. And you know, for me, and not to say that it's not okay. I mean, you need to have those social outlets and things like that. I'm not saying you have to be a hermit or anything like that, but you've just got to be able to say, hey, I can't talk right now. I need to get this and done. Can I call you back in a few days unless it's something really, really pressing or whatever it may be? But I just think a lot of the times when it comes to our time management struggles as coaches, it's a lot of self-inflicted wounds because we just – again, have those wrong priorities in place, and it's hard enough to do our job. But when we're bringing in distractions that we don't need to bring in, we have enough on our plate that we know we're going to be distracted by various different things. If we bring in our own distractions, that's only going to cause more problems. So for me, that's a big one as well.
Yeah, I mean, you want your players to be disciplined. You know, they're going to have to kind of streamline some things, you know, basketball, school, family, those types of things. As a coach, you want to role model that in your own life as well, where you have to be disciplined. And I think pretty much everybody's phone is set up on Sunday to shoot them a reminder of how much they use their phone, how much screen time they had for the week. And if it's where it shouldn't be, you have to be disciplined and structured enough. And don't get me wrong, there might be reasons why you're on the phone a little bit more one week, more so than others, so to speak, but you have to be disciplined enough to put the phone down, stop scrolling, stop, you know, looking at Twitter or X, whatever. You've got to be able to have the discipline to be better at that stuff so that you're not wasting precious time and putting yourself behind the eight ball.
Coaches, do you want to look good? Stupid question. Of course you want to look good. We all want to look good. You know what's the best way to look good? Buying yourself some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise. We've got some really, really good looking stuff here. We've got t-shirts and sweatshirts, and you are not going to regret picking that up. T-shirts are $22 a piece. Sweatshirts are $30 a piece. If I need to mail it to you, it's just $5 shipping and handling to get this good looking stuff out to you. Coaches, I appreciate all that you've done for me over the last 3 years or so with A Pen and a Napkin. I hope I've been able to help you out. Might as well come out and help out the Twitter handle and the podcast by ordering some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise. And like I said, you get to look good. If you're interested in ordering, you can DM me on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin, send me a direct message, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com, and I'll get you those ordering details so that you can order some A Pen and a Napkin merchandise. Well, Tony, if you're going to waste time and be distracted, there's two things that are allowable. One is if you're listening to a Pen and a Napkin podcast. And of course, Tony, what do you think the other may be?
You listen to Europe's Greatest Hits.
Without a doubt, there is no wasting time when you are with Europe and listening to their greatest hits. So, Mr. Viss, it is your turn for trivia. What do you got
for me? All right, here's my introduction.
Okay.
Obviously, with the University of Iowa just down the road from Cedar Rapids, Caitlin Clark is the big deal this week with being the number one draft pick in the WNBA. And anyway, they've been running some things around here called the Clark Effect. And one of the things that we saw was Caitlin Clark's impact on the viewership of the WNBA draft. They said that they averaged 2.4 5 million viewers with a peak at just over 3 million, just shy of 3.1 million. Mm-hmm. So, Marty, my question is, that is obviously the all-time record. Can you tell me the number of viewers that was the old record?
I think I saw this. For the WNBA draft?
Yes.
I want to say it was like 525,000.
Incorrect.
Too high, too low.
You are too low.
600,000.
I'm going to say you're close enough. It was 601,000 in 2004.
Yes!
That was the year that Diana Taurasi came out.
Yes, and it counts! Patrick Ewing from the baseline. Yeah. All right. Hey, I'll take that there. A heck of a night the other night, by the way. It was, I thought ESPN did a really, really good job with the draft. I don't know. What did you see it?
I got to catch a little bit of it. I had a soccer match, so I was on the pitch. But yeah, I mean, I caught the more of the second, third round than the first round. But yeah, I thought ESPN, Andrea Carter is a star. She's doing really, really well. And I think she's did a fantastic job there. And the other thing too, it wasn't just Caitlin Clark. There were other really, really good players in the draft. And not only were there other really, really good players, but where they were drafted at fit almost 9 times out of 10, exactly what that team needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andrea Carter is a star, but is she this good?
How about that?
Marty, that's Mel Allen. Nobody's that good.
I know, except for maybe Vern Lundquist, you know.
That's so true. Yeah. Vern Lundquist is great.
He is really good. So
even if he does hide behind trees.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, let's you brought it up there, the WNBA draft. Outstanding draft, a lot of really, really good players, with more good players to come here. So I think we're going to see, a nice, handing off of the baton, if you will, from Diana Taurasi and Ella Deledon and, Candace Parker and kind of that generation to the Angel Reese's, to the Paige Beckers, to the Caitlin Clarks, to the Juju Watkins, Cardoza, you know, all of those people. But I thought a lot of, you know, yeah, just kind of your overall thoughts. You kind of mentioned it before there, before the Mel Allen clip there, but I thought the draft was really well done, and I thought we're going to have a nice influx of talent coming into the season here.
They are, and the thing that is becoming more and more evident with the WNBA is how many good women players there are right now. Mm-hmm. And they really are in the need to expand. I think I read last year, if I remember correctly, that of the 37 draft picks, only 15 of them made a roster.
Yeah.
That's how tight it is there. And when you go through and take a look, you know, this year, I think this has the potential to be the best WNBA draft ever. And so it'll be interesting to me how many of them end up making a roster. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be over 20.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, part of that is, of course, limited franchise, but then also limited roster spots, because I think each team only has, what, 10 or 11 roster
spots?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. I think that's going to expand. I think they're going to be able to get up to 12, I would think. Portland got an expansion, San Francisco got an expansion team for sure. Portland is going to get one, so that'll put them at 14. I think the magic number right now is probably 16 teams.
Yeah, I believe that's what they were kicking around, and I think they sent out a list, I want to say a 4 or 5 spots that they're looking at going to get it to 16.
Mm-hmm. What were some of those spots?
There was a franchise potentially in Florida, and I cannot remember what city now.
Orlando, wouldn't it?
Was there Nashville, maybe?
Okay.
And I'm not sure. I know I read it recently. I didn't really look all that closely to it because, to be honest with you, I was hoping they would take a look at potentially Des Moines. But if Caitlin Clark's not going to be in the Des Moines market, yeah. I just don't think that would be a great fit. But if Caitlin Clark was in Des Moines,
yeah,
it would probably be the highest attended one.
Yeah, they would sell out every game at the Well, you know. So I mean, that's just a no brainer there. So, but then you don't want to get too, like, you know, you don't want to make the same mistake like the ABA made, where it's like the Kentucky Colonels or the, you know, I mean,
yep.
You know, that type of thing. I think you do have to, if you really want it to grow the way that you want it to grow, you've got to stick to your major metropolitan areas or you know, even like Connecticut. I mean, you're in that, you know, Connecticut is highly populated area. Obviously, UConn is right there. Massachusetts is right there. Boston's not that far away. You know, that type of deal. So I'm sure they're going to be really smart. They're gonna study the landscape. The decision making is so much better now than it was 50 years ago when it came to things like this. So WNBA is really putting itself in a really, really good place. The talent influx. What do you think about Reese and Cardoza going together to Chicago?
I think if they can get along, which obviously we saw the incident earlier in the season with the SEC tournament between the two teams, if they can get along, I don't know if teams are going to be able to get a rebound on the Chicago Sky.
Ever.
Yes.
Well, that's Teresa Witherspoon is the head coach there now, isn't she?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. They got Cardoso, they got Reese, and then they got a really good shooting guard out of Gonzaga. I think all three of them will make that team. I think Chicago arguably had one of, if not the best WNBA drafts.
Yep. Yep. They nailed those two. Los Angeles got Cameron Brink and the gal from Tennessee,
Rekia Jackson.
Yep, and I think those two will fit together well. You know, Indiana now has Kelsey Mitchell, Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, and then who's the gal that they drafted high a couple of years, the year before Aaliyah Boston. So they've got a nice young core.
Oh, yeah, that's another post kid. I'm trying to think of her name right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, so they've got a nice young core as well. So, yeah, should be a good run. The league is going to capitalize this. I think they tip off on May 14th. So we'll be talking about the W a lot this spring and summer as we roll through stuff. So coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching. And during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Speaking of the summer, Tony, let's talk a little Olympics. Let's just jump in there. Let's just kind of keep the Mike Greenberg flow of things with it here. The men's Olympic team is announced. An old team, but a really, really talented team. But you've got some concerns as well. As talented as they are, to me, the first thing I look at is age. And the second thing I look at is, man, a lot of these guys have really fought some injuries, issues over the years. And that, as talented as our team is going into the Paris Olympics, those are the two things that jump out to me that could be an issue, per se.
Very talented team. I think it's as talented as we've had in a while.
Yep.
The other thing that I would 100% agree with you on is the fact that it is, we'll go with seasoned and experienced.
Yes.
And they are frail. You go through there and take a look at some of them. You know, Embiid obviously has an injury history. Kawhi Leonard has an injury history. Kevin Durant's been healthy the past couple years, but has an injury history. Anthony Davis, again, an injury history. And those are some of your very, very key pieces. And you've got some guys that are not spring chickens on that team, but a super, super talented team.
Yeah.
I forgot Kawhi because they gave him the last spot.
Yeah, they gave Kawhi the last spot, which was kind of surprising. I'm surprised they gave, like, Halliburton a spot ahead of Kawhi, but with LeBron, with KD, with Tatum, you got some dudes there, but I think that it's going to be a challenge. I do agree with you, Tony. I think this is one of the most talented teams that we have sent over there. It may be better than like the 2008 Redeem team. I'm not going to speak blasphemy and say anything about the 92 team because that is exactly what it would be. It would be blasphemy unless they do something different in that regard. And again, the world of basketball is different than it was in 92. The Olympics are going to be much more competitive because basketball around the world is much more competitive, in large part because of the 92 Dream Team and the way that they spread the popularity of the game. You know, and we're seeing that, 30 years later. But I think that it is an immensely talented team. I think you got guys that will check their egos in at the door, I think, for the most part. I'm really looking forward to traveling with the team this year, Tony. It should be a lot of fun. I'll give you some reports from out on the road.
I appreciate it. You know, not a lot of people get embedded with the Olympic team like what you're going to be. And I'm just super, super proud of you for that.
Yeah, now when they discover that I am embedded with them, that might cause some issues. I may
just keep telling me you're the equipment guy.
You'll be there in case I need legal representation, right?
Yeah, I've got a law degree.
I thought you were majoring in pre-med.
No, I ended up getting law. I ran into some guy. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie My Cousin Vinny, but I ran into that guy at law school, so I've got the same law degree as Joe Pesci.
All right, very nice. So let's talk a little, Coach A. What do you think of the Mark Pope hire at Kentucky? I don't want to say I kind of called it last week, Tony, with Scott Drew turning it down, but I kind of called it. I kind of thought that he might not take the bait. And it turns out to be Mark Pope. So, what do you think?
It'll be interesting. You know, a lot of what they criticized Cal on, in terms of being a higher ranked team getting beat by a double digit seed and stuff like that. You see that happen like last season with BYU as a 6 getting beat by an 11. And again, they were in the Big 12, and the Big 12 is one of the premier basketball conferences in the country. But it's not a sexy hire in terms of, like, Cal brought in dudes. And I don't know if Mark Pope's going to be able to do that. But the one thing I would give you is Mark Pope was making chicken salad out of not the best ingredients while at BYU. even if he doesn't recruit at the level that Cal does, he's still going to get four-star guys. And then on top of that, you know, Mark Pope loves Kentucky. If you were to cut him, he would bleed Kentucky blue. And he's also a pretty good offensive guy. Like, they run good stuff at BYU that's really, really hard to guard. But I don't know. It's not the splashy Kentucky hire, but I will say this. I'm going to give him a chance because it might be more substance over style in this incident.
Yeah, I think – yeah, and sometimes – you know, we get wrapped up in the name and the press conference. And
won the press conference.
I think he won the press conference. Yeah, I think he won. I tell you what, Tony, that 96 Kentucky team was one of the best college basketball teams I've ever seen. Might be the best college basketball team I've ever seen.
They had some dudes.
Oh, they had some dudes. And the way I will hats off BBN. The way they rolled in on that bus and Tony Delk's walking out and Jeff Shepard's walking out and that was, you know, I'm going to go a little Ron Burgundy. That was quite impressive.
Very impressive.
It was pretty good. So, you know, it's I think he's going to be fine. I really do. I think he gets it. I think he gets Kentucky. I think he understands it. Really, really smart guy. And I think that I think it's going to be kind of that classic. I think it's going to be good for everybody. I think it's going to be good for Cal and Arkansas. I think it's going to be good for Eric Musselman to go somewhere else. I think it's going to be good for Mark Pope, and I think he's going to. I think he will do a really good job there. I really do. So,
and he got the blessing from the Godfather, Pitino.
Yeah,
Pitino gave him his recommendation. If he's good enough for Rick Pitino, he's probably good enough for Tony Viss. And you know, you go through and you take a look at things with Mark Pope, and you know, like I said, you got to give him some time. Let him get his vision in there, his type of player in there, and see what happens. But do know that if they begin to lose to Arkansas, it might get a little squeaky there in Lexington.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you do have to say about BBN is they are a very patient and you know, just willing to sit back and let things develop as a fan base. I mean, they are. You know, quite understanding most of the time, you know. So, okay. Yeah. Was that enough sarcasm?
That was good. That was good. It was thick.
Yeah. I do remember a story when Pitino was there and he was doing his radio show and some guy calls in and, coach, I tape every game and I rewatch the Mississippi State game three different times and I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what we're trying to accomplish. You know, he's doing it. Pitino is like, I haven't even rewatched the Mississippi State game three times. You need to go. You need to spend some time with your wife. You need to relax. We play LSU on Saturday at 3:00. Turn on the TV at 2:59 and just enjoy the game. It's going to be all right. You know, so it's what makes it special. It's what makes it a great place. And when you win there, I'm sure there's nothing like it, but it is a place that has massive expectations, and he's going to have to try and do his best to live up to them because he is looking at the ghosts of Adolph Rupp and Joe B. Hall and Rick Pitino and, you know, to a degree, Cal. But I think he's going to do really well. I think he's going to do really well. So, Tony, let's bring it home with this. Let's do a little NBA playoff preview. Let's take about 1 to 2 minutes to talk about each series, kind of who we're picking, who we like, why we like them, so forth and so on. How's that sound, buddy?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's start with Orlando and Cleveland. I'll let you have the floor first.
It's going to be a good series. Obviously, the 4 or 5, so it's kind of that coin flip one.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I would go with on this one is I still have kind of a bad taste in my mouth from the Cavs wiping out a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Orlando. I don't know if I would have said that back in October, but I like Orlando. Banchero is a growing star.
Yep.
No doubt about that. Wagner is really good. And then I don't, you know, the other thing, that the guy they bring in off the bench, Jonathan Isaacs, if he played more minutes, that guy might be the defensive player of the year.
Yep.
And then some of it depends upon the guard play, but I'm going to take Orlando in six.
I like that, and I actually agree with that. Cleveland went on a crazy run in like January and February. They went like 18-1 or some crazy thing like that. So let's say they went 18-1. It was something close to that, Tony. The rest of the season, if you take out that 18-1, they're 30-33. They're below 500. They are about as good as the Bulls or the Hawks. If you take out that one, now they did it, and hey, hats off, you know. But I like Orlando as well. I like their athleticism. You know, this might be a little old school. You know, the Van Gundy brothers might get a little misty eyed watching this, because it could be one of these classic, you know, 84-82 rock fights, because both teams are so defensive minded and they're both a bit offensive challenged at times. But I like Orlando as well. I just think, you know, Cleveland's kind of been beat up all year. I don't know how healthy Mitchell is. Evan Mobley hasn't come along offensively as well as they thought that they would. And I think the Donovan Mitchell is maybe talking to a realtor or two as well, and I think that might be hanging over things. So I just think Orlando is just, you know, just in a better place, if you will, than Cleveland. And I agree with you, Tony. I like the Orlando in six pick here. So next up, Milwaukee, as Alice Cooper would say.
Oh boy, we're quoting Alice Cooper now.
Alice Cooper, you're my hero. Wayne's World, for those of you wondering. Yes, so
Garth.
We fear change. Milwaukee and Indiana. I like Indiana, Tony.
Giannis is hurt. Yeah. Indiana in five.
Indiana in five. Wow.
Take him in five.
Wow.
There's already bad blood. The whole Giannis going after the ball thing.
Yep.
And then him not playing. They finished under 500 with Doc as their head coach. The Pacers kind of lost their way for a little bit, but seem to be back on a much, much better place. Halliburton really struggled for a while, but they finished out the year strong. I love the Siakam pickup for them. At the trade deadline, I think this is where it really pays off. Indiana in five.
I think the pace of...
Maybe six.
I think the pace of Indiana... Giannis, Milwaukee is not very athletic, and their best athlete is out with a calf injury, and it sounds like he's going to be out for, you know, probably, what, three... Probably minimum of three games, it sounds like. Kind of, they haven't given an exact number, but you know, you could just kind of tell, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking at, you know, maybe three, maybe four games, and they might be down 3-1 by the time he comes back, and he hasn't played in a couple weeks. And I know he's superhuman, but still, I think Indiana beat him 3-1 in the season series, 3-1 or 4-1, something like that. I think Indiana's going to win it as well, Tony, in five or six. We are on the same wavelength here. So
that's scary.
Yeah. Sorry. So, folks, put all your money on Cleveland and Milwaukee right now. So, Phoenix and Minnesota. And we're covering, we're recording this Wednesday night, so we didn't get a chance to talk about, you know, Denver and LA. We were just going to cover the four series that were set before the play-in games, and we'll talk about that later on here. So Phoenix and Minnesota, I think it's going to be a really good series. Phoenix has had some success against Minnesota this year, but I think in the end, Minnesota is just a little bit more of a complete team. I think this is going to go six or seven, but I think Minnesota is going to take this, Tony.
I agree, and it's really hard for me to pick against Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, but I don't know. I'm a big Anthony Edwards fan. Cat's coming back, which I really think helps them. In this series, I think you'll see them play Cat more at the five and sit Gobert. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's the better Minnesota lineup. And Rudy does some good things. You know, probably end up either him or Victor will be defensive player of the year. But I think Minnesota with the home court advantage, they're going to do it in seven.
Yeah. I think we're on the same wavelength there. You know, I just think Cat has figured out that he's the second best player. Gobert has fit in. Mike Conley is Mike Conley, just steady Eddie. I just think they're a better overall team, and I just think over a seven game series, if things are fairly close, usually the bigger team kind of has the edge, you know, because Phoenix has great mid range jump shooters without a doubt. They got Booker and they got Durant, two of the best, and Beal, he's pretty dang good too. But I just think the overall depth of Minnesota is going to carry the day in the end. So. Perhaps the juiciest of all of these series, Tony, is LA, the LA Clippers, and Dallas. Who you got?
I also think this is going six or seven, and I am going to go Dallas. As much as Kyrie and them took flack with that whole fit last year when he went to the Mavericks, they seem to have answered a lot of those questions. And I think, you know, if you go back and take a look at the trade deadline, I really think Dallas, with picking up PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, two moves that kind of weren't the sexy moves, if you will, but two moves that really, really made them better. I like Derek Lively, you know, as a finisher at the rim off lobs by Luka. Mm-hmm. And I just, and you look at the fact that Kawhi, who we talked about earlier, he hasn't played a whole lot since like towards the middle to end of March.
Yeah.
And I think getting his timing back, Russ is going to have to guard some people. They're needing him to be really good defensively. And
is Russ back?
I just don't see it. And so I'm going to go Dallas in six or seven.
Yeah, I agree with you. Luka and Kyrie are averaging almost 60 points a game combined. I mean, just crazy. I think they're at like about 59 points a game. But you brought up the trades that they made. I think sometimes when we think of our teams, we think of, you know, collecting talent, but what Dallas went for was fit. You know, how do these couple of guys fit in theory with these two all world scorers and ball handlers? Because those guys are going to have the ball in their hands 95% of the time, one or the other. So we don't need somebody that can create and do all these other things. We need this, and this. Which is the opposite of what Luka and Kyrie do. So I think that I like Dallas here. I think they closed the regular season on like a 15-3 run or something like that. So they're kind of the anti-Cleveland, a little bit of the anti-Clippers right now. And they're, like you said, they're beat up. Kawhi's been beat up. Russell Westbrook's been out for a while. He missed some time. James Harden is battling an injury. I think they said a foot injury or something like that. So I like Dallas in this as well. So, yeah, Kawhi isn't even cleared for 5-on-5 right now as of today. So, you know, it's going to be tough for him to start this weekend if he's not cleared a couple of days out. So that's a big blow as well. So, We went 4-for-4 on the same ones, Tony. So
and like we said, went a lot with the lower seeds too.
Yeah, we did. So folks, put your money on Phoenix, Clippers, Milwaukee, and Cleveland. So, Tony, last words on time management.
Just the fact again, you know, I'm good with this. Plan your work and work your plan.
Yep.
You've got to take some time to put some thought into it and set boundaries. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you lower your chance of burnout by quite a bit, and you increase your effectiveness tremendously.
Yep. Totally agree. Great stuff this week, as always, Tony. Good luck out on the pitch with the Cougars. Keep scoring more goals than the other teams, and we'll be back next week at some point with something that we'll be chatting about. So, folks, I hope you've gotten a lot out of this. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day –